Well, what's going on, y'all? And thank y'all all so very much for joining us here today on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and not alone. As always, across the table from me, well, don't get too excited, folks. It's just Kyle Phelps.
Yes, everybody, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. A blistering hot Texas afternoon.
And it's a nice one, ain't it?
Well, it is that time of year. My garden is getting crushed, though. It doesn't matter how much I water it. It's getting crushed, but that's okay.
And you've got all the sun stuff up over it and trying to keep the direct heat off of it. And it's still just, when it's 103.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you
kind of, kind of don't matter.
But you know what? It'll pick up again in the fall. When it starts getting cooler, the tomatoes, they don't actually die. They look like they're dead, but they come right back.
You're describing me in the summer compared to the fall.
Right.
I look a lot better in the fall. Well, it's mainly because I'm bundled up. You can't really see me. That's why I look so much better.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Oh, you know what else I'm looking forward to?
What's up?
We're going to be in Memphis, Tennessee this weekend.
Yeah, folks, listen to this. Hey, if you're up around Memphis, swing by the DU Expo.
Man.
We're going to be up there kicking it the whole weekend.
We had a good time last year, and it looks like it's three times the size this year.
It's going to be wild.
I'm excited.
Are you going to buy fermented cucumbers and spicy smoked meats while you're there this year?
You know it. I'm bringing a whole cooler just to transport it back to Texas.
Went crazy about pickles. Y'all heard it last time. Speaking of crazy, I wouldn't say this is crazy, but I would say this is extremely unsettling. As long as we're going to stay along the path when I like to talk about Bigfoot's encounters with military. Right. I love any kind of like a military encounter. I love it when they encounter police or just any first responders. I'm not going to wish a Bigfoot encounter on like an ambulance driver. I don't, you know, they don't need that. But if he's got a gun, maybe I don't know. But
if you were in the military and you had a Bigfoot encounter, what kind of weapon would you like to have with you? Well, just a particular rifle, particular caliber? Like what would you like? Flamethrower? Because, you know, they're covered in hair.
338 LaPlua.
Oh, that's what you want? Bolt action? Or you want semi-auto?
Oh, if I'm going to go semi-auto, I want the M1, right? But I would prefer probably just a bolt action. But I'm not looking to shoot them. Like, if I'm looking to shoot them, I'm going to call in an airstrike. No, I don't know. I don't know. I still don't know that I want to see one.
I want that sound weapon that makes them feel
the discombobulator. I want the discombobulator. Get a load of this from 1996. The exact date was not given. This is what it says. I served in the United States Army for 22 years.
Thank you for your service.
Right. For most of my military career, my specialty was infantry scout. I completed one station unit training at Fort Benning, Georgia, where I was taught reconnaissance and scouting skills. I was deployed in support of Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Bosnia, and Kosovo. At the time of this incident, I was stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. In 1996, my unit traveled to Fort Lewis, Washington, to participate in a joint training exercise. We had already been there for several weeks and were assigned various duties, including portraying terrorists and enemy personnel during multiple exercises. So on the night of the incident, I decided that our opposing force team needed a few hours of rest before beginning our next mission. We parked our Humvees as close as possible to a hill that I believed would help conceal us from the other participants. We then climbed to the top of the hill and established a temporary position. Our plan was to launch an attack at approximately 5 a.m. My guard shift began at midnight. Not long after the shift started, we were suddenly awakened by what sounded like live small arms fire. Everyone participating in the exercise was supposed to be carrying blank ammunition. The weapons also had red blank firing adapters attached to the ends of their muzzles. There is a very distinct difference between the sound of live ammunition and blank ammunition, especially to someone familiar with military weapons. What we heard sounded like live rounds. The firing appeared to be coming from approximately 350 to 400 meters away, on the opposite side of the hill. And according to our tactical map, no military unit was supposed to be operating in that location. Within moments of the shooting, we heard an extremely loud roar. I had previously heard the roar of a lion, but this was much louder. It was not simply something we heard. We could physically feel it. The men with me were frightened. Hell, I was frightened as well. The weapons continued to fire for approximately 30 seconds. Two of my soldiers wanted to run down the hill immediately to find out what was happening, but I stopped them. We didn't know who was firing or what was waiting on the other side. So we gathered our rifles and night vision goggles, then cautiously began moving down the hill. We advanced from tree to tree using the vegetation for concealment. As we approached the area, we could see several bright flashlights. One member of my team was attempting to communicate over the radio when a soldier ahead of us suddenly shouted that there was movement on the hill. We had been spotted. We were ordered to identify ourselves, come out of concealment, and approach their position. That was when we saw the opposing squad. Lying on the ground in front of the squad were two creatures that I can only describe as Sasquatch. One appeared to be male. He was sprawled out on his back and was obviously dead. The other appeared to be female. She was still alive, but she was breathing heavily, spitting blood and choking. She eventually succumbed to her injuries and stopped breathing while we were standing there. My team and I were in shock. Much of what was initially said to us did not register because our attention remained fixed on the two bodies. The soldier who confronted us identified himself only as a captain. He was speaking loudly and was clearly angry that we had entered the area. His men confiscated our weapons and night vision goggles. The captain eventually stepped directly into my face to force me to focus on what he was saying. As I stood there, I noticed an awful odor coming from the creatures. When the initial shock began to wear off, I took a closer look at the soldiers and their equipment. Their weapons and gear did not appear to be standard issue. Based on the helmets and equipment they were using, I became convinced that they were Delta Force. That was my assessment at the time. They did not formally identify their unit to us. Approximately 5 minutes later, a colonel arrived and severely reprimanded us for entering the area. Before we were moved away from the scene, I saw the soldiers preparing the two Sasquatch for extraction. A Black Hawk helicopter approached at low altitude and hovered above the area. We were then escorted away from the hill. After traveling for approximately 2 hours, we reached another location where we were taken into a room. We remained there for more than an hour before the colonel, the captain, and several other military officers entered. They gave us direct orders not to discuss what we had witnessed. We were told if anyone learned we had spoken about the incident, we could face disciplinary action under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. They placed a great deal of fear in us. The officers said our battalion commander had been informed that we had interfered with another unit's training mission. We were instructed to return to the Tactical Operations Center after the debriefing. Because I was the only non-commissioned officer in the group, I received additional pressure. I was told that my military career would be destroyed if I ever spoke about what had happened. Sometime later, we were placed under guard in the back of a 5-ton military truck and transported to the hill where we had originally established our position. We were permitted to collect the equipment and personal items we had left on the hilltop. We then returned to the current location of our Tactical Operations Center. A military truck followed us for part of the trip, then continued down the road. When we reached the Tactical Operations Center, our battalion commander gave us another severe reprimand. That incident remained with me for many years. There were times when I wanted to climb onto the roof of my house and shout the entire story for everyone to hear. The fear of retaliation from the Army or another government agency prevented me from doing so. I often wondered whether government personnel monitored podcasts and radio programs to determine whether military or government employees were revealing information about operations that were never supposed to become public. I still don't know why those creatures were pursued or killed. The image that has remained with me most clearly is the female's labored breathing. I remember watching tears roll down her face as she passed. There are several details I've not included in this statement because I'm fully describing everything would require writing a book. I wanted to document the most important parts of what occurred. I needed to finally bring this account into the open and free myself from the burden of carrying it alone. When I originally provided this statement, 28 years had passed since the incident. Whatever happens as a result of revealing it now happens. Gee.
Man, I hope that's a real story.
Isn't that wild? You just stumble into it.
I've heard several of these accounts, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like somehow the up and ups know that these things are there.
Yeah.
And they know they either try to kill them or capture them.
Well, I want to know what they were doing there, like in the middle of this mission.
Yeah.
Like, what did, if it was Delta, what were they doing there? Like,
how did they know to go there?
Well, and was it already cited? They brought them in and hoping that they could get it done and get them out of there before these other guys got into it, and then it got out of control. Yeah, what's the point of shooting them? What was it creates so many more, like everything else, so many more questions.
It'd make a good movie.
It would make a great movie.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got a pretty cool sighting here.
Lay it on me.
It says, my sister and I saw what may have been the same humanoid a few months apart. My first sighting occurred in July 2019. I was sitting inside my truck, which was parked facing east toward my house in a rural area of the Navajo Nation in Arizona. Cam and I, we've both been there. I was talking on the phone with my boyfriend at the time. We would often remain on the phone until one of us fell asleep. That night, he apparently fell asleep first. It was around 10 p.m. After trying several times to wake him or determine whether he was still awake or not, I ended the call. As soon as the call ended, I suddenly had the feeling that I was about to see something frightening. I tried to shake off the feeling. I looked behind me towards the west. To the northwest was an open lot with a large street light near the middle of the property. Between the lot and my house was a ditch and another open area. Something emerged from the darkness near the ditch. I could see it in contrast against the brightly illuminated background of the lot. The being appeared to float or glide above the ground. Its movements were extremely smooth. It did not have the normal, slightly uneven movements that I would expect from a person or an animal. I stared at it in astonishment because its arms did not look like normal arms. They appeared fluid, almost tentacle-like. The figure looked as though it was made of water, and its arms moved in a flowing, wave-like motion. It glided very quickly. I became extremely frightened because I had never experienced anything like it before. I later began calling it the Fluid Man when describing it to my family. I can still see the image of it whenever I think about that encounter. My sister had her encounter in October of 2019. It was around 10 p.m. on a Friday night. She went outside to get some fresh air because the wood stove inside of her house could become very hot when it was filled with wood and coal. A short time later, she suddenly opened the door and urgently told me to come outside. I had been sitting at the table across the living room near the kitchen. I immediately ran toward her, but she said the thing was already gone. She told me that she had seen something rise from the ground. She described it as looking like a zombie, rising 20 to 30 feet into the air. She demonstrated the movement with an exaggerated upward motion, which made the description even more disturbing. The figure had appeared in the same general area where I had seen the Fluid Man. When someone steps through the front door, they are facing west towards that area. My sister said the figure began flying after two people who were walking west along the road. The figure and the pedestrians were traveling in the same direction. My sister is a very stubborn and courageous person who is not easily frightened. She will do anything to protect our family. Like our father, she rarely shows emotion and usually maintains a strong exterior. We have a very close relationship. She is my best friend. I've seen sides of her that most people have not. Even so, I'd never seen her as frightened and alarmed as this time. Her reaction frightened me because it was so unusual for her. Both experiences were terrifying. It was especially strange that they occurred only a few months apart and in the same area. I always hope that I never see it again. My sister still brings it up about her experience occasionally during late night conversations. Thanks. Wow.
What was that?
A fluid man. I don't know, but the description of it, like looking like it's flowing like liquid water or tentacles, it reminds me of like the movie Spawn. Remember Spawn, how his cape would move?
The way the cape would move?
Yeah, I that's what I'm kind of picturing in my mind.
I'm thinking of the alien in, I just went blank on it, Ed Harris.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Where it follows them and then like the door closes and cuts it off the way it can control water.
Yeah. Yeah, what is that?
Man, I went blank.
I don't know.
But yeah, now you're going to go crazy thinking about it. Go ahead and search it up.
There's a lot of strange sightings like that on these reservations.
Yes.
For whatever reason. Yeah. It makes me wonder, is the land itself cursed, or is it the inhabitants that live on the reservation that brings out these entities.
Well, it's funny you bring it up because I've got some cool, like Navajo or Northern Cheyenne rather reservation stories coming up later.
Oh, okay.
That's got some pretty neat
stuff. I've got another, and speaking of fluid man, I've got another crazy transparent flying creature.
Oh, man. What's up with all the invisible stuff, man?
I don't know. That's an interesting question.
I like it invisible, so I don't see it.
This encounter occurred on a very cold winter night in 1993 or 1994. I'd stepped outside of my house I was visiting and was walking towards my car, which was parked across the street. It was approximately 10 p.m. in Brigton, Maine. The sky was exceptionally clear and filled with brilliant-looking stars. As soon as I looked up, I noticed movement above me. Something was rapidly twisting and turning through the air. It moved like a bird, or perhaps like birds fighting over a scrap of food, but its movements were confined to an extremely tight area. It appeared to be approximately 60 feet above the ground and somewhere between 50 and 100 feet northeast of me. It repeatedly looped, twisted, and reversed direction within the area, measuring less than 10 feet across. The thing appeared to be approximately 5 to 10 feet across, and it was completely transparent. It looked as though it was made from glass. I could see the stars behind it, but their light became distorted as the object moved. The stars streaked, shifted, and blurred through the different parts of its form. I later purchased a glass sculpture of a bird because it helped demonstrate what I had seen. When you look through the different thicknesses and the curves in the glass, whatever is behind it remains visible, but becomes distorted. That was how this thing appeared. The otherwise clear stars became streaks of light that shifted constantly as the form spun, twisted, and swirled. I do not believe this was a machine with a uniform or symmetrical structure. It reminded me more of the body of a bird or fish, thicker in certain places and thinner in others. Its shape seemed to contort continuously. The resulting lines of starlight were much more complex than a figure eight, and the movement looked nothing like a circular object simply rotating. I cannot say with certainty that it had wings, but it definitely moved like a bird. I also had this impression that it was angry, distressed, or extremely agitated. Its movements seemed frantic and aggressive. If a person had displayed that kind of body language, I would have described the individual as being completely overwhelmed with anger. That was the feeling I received from it, and I don't know why. I watched the thing for approximately 3 minutes before it disappeared behind some trees. It's difficult to convey how quickly this thing was moving. It made extremely tight twists, turns, loops, and reversals while the starlight behind it continued to stretch and shift. It seemed like a living thing, with a body that was thicker in some areas and thinner in others. It did not have the uniform appearance I would expect from a machine. I was not frightened because it never moved closer to me. I simply stood there watching it. I do not believe I would have seen it under ordinary conditions. The night was unusually clear, and the stars were exceptionally bright. The object became visible only because the stars behind it were being distorted by its movement. If the sky had been cloudy, I would not have seen it. I also doubt that it would have been visible during the day unless it passed directly in front of something that provided a contrasting background. I'd never heard of anything like this, and I had never encountered another person who described seeing something similar in the sky. Years later, I heard an account on the Rusty West YouTube channel involving strange things reportedly seen by truck drivers. One trucker had stopped near a large field and claimed to have seen an enormous shadow moving across the ground. The shadow appeared to show the movement of wings, but the trucker could not see anything in the sky that could have produced it. The report was not identical to my sighting, but it was the only account I had encountered that made me wonder whether someone else had observed a similar thing. On July 7, 2026, my daughter contacted me and said she had seen something unusual in the night sky near Freeport, Maine. She described it as resembling a transparent bird that was twisting, circling, and spinning within a small area of the sky. Her description was remarkably similar to what I had witnessed in Brigton more than 32 years earlier. She did not even know about my sighting. When my children were young, I taught them to pay attention to the sky and recognize things such as satellites. I'd become familiar with satellites after spending many years fishing at night. like my original encounter, my daughter's observation occurred beneath a very clear, star-filled sky. She agreed that she probably would not have noticed the object at all if it had remained still or if the clouds had covered the stars. I've contacted several people who collect accounts of these strange phenomena and unusual encounters. So far, none of them has told me what they have heard of anything exactly like my encounter. Man, you know what it makes me think of? We talk about it all the time. These biological entities that live way up in the stratosphere.
Yes.
Because a lot of the sightings of they described them as jellyfish-like.
Yeah.
Maybe these things do come down to Earth at night and, I don't know, feed on things. Or, I don't know. But and then you just happen, people just happenstance to see them.
Yeah, I don't know what they would even feed on up there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right, yeah.
I've seen a lot of videos where it's supposedly from like a high weather balloon or a satellite even, and people describe them as UFOs coming, leaving and coming to Earth. But they don't look like the traditional UFO. Yeah. It looks almost like it's something biological. Like maybe there really are creatures living up there. I know that sounds crazy, but we used to think that nothing lived at the bottom of the ocean, but we constantly are finding things that do live down there. So why couldn't something live up at 80,000 feet and it descends to Earth every once in a while to feed on something or to get water or whatever?
Well, what about the videos where those guys are using their thermals and looking up in the skies and you're seeing stuff at night that you never see with the bare eye, right? Just the naked eye, all kinds of things moving around up there.
I know.
You want one to look up there, dude, don't you?
Every time I go to a Texas Trophy Hunters extravaganza or something, I'm obsessed with those Trigicon night vision scopes. I just can't pull the trigger because they're so darn expensive. Because
they're so expensive.
But I would love to just sit, like you said, go out to where a dark spot in Texas and just watch the sky for a couple hours.
Yeah.
Have a couple MLs and just stare at the sky.
I want to set it up where it's on a screen. But then
maybe
I don't.
Maybe I'm freaked out because I'm like, dude, what am I seeing?
I want to set it up where it's on a tripod, but it links to a screen where you can just sit there and move the tripod and look at the big screen and set it up in areas to watch it move.
We have to go somewhere where there's no light pollution.
Coppers Break State Park.
Oh, have you been there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a dark spot in Texas, and it's awesome.
Is the night sky amazing?
It's awesome. Yeah, it's good times. It's really, especially when you're spoiled to being around all the light we have here, right? And you finally get to get out there where it's dark, dark, and you're like, yeah, that's what I'm supposed to
see. I'm older enough to remember, because when I was a kid, I had a telescope, and where I lived north of town, the night sky was amazing.
It was awesome.
And now you can't see nothing. Yeah, light pollution's terrible.
You got to go way out.
All I see are airplanes coming from DFW Airport. That's all I see.
That's it. Constant. Speaking of all I see is a break heading up, folks. When we get back on the other side, I've got a very interesting deer story I want to share with you all. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And we are back.
Yes.
I've got a story. It took place in 2020 from a fellow named Leon. Get a load of this.
Let me get a drink of my sweet tea.
Here we go. At the time, I was serving as a corporal in the United States Marines and working security at the Marine Corps base Quantico. My regular nighttime shift ran from 9 p.m. until 6 a.m., and I normally patrolled the western side of the base. Well, during a break one night,
Sorry, folks. That's somebody trying to call me. Continue, Kyle.
Kyle's important, y'all. During a break one, and just so you know, we've done this for over 13 years, and he still can't silence his phone, folks.
That was on the laptop, actually. My phone is silent.
That's what an excuse sounds like, folks. During a break one night, I decided to check one of the game cameras I had placed in the woods. I used the cameras to watch for trespassers and poachers who might be entering the restricted areas. The camera was only a short distance from the road near a creek, and as soon as I entered the woods, I noticed that everything had become silent. There were no insects, birds, or normal forest sounds. The silence was immediate, and I found it deeply unnerving. I continued toward the creek and eventually reached the camera. I sat beside the tree, opened my laptop, and began checking the camera's memory card. Within a few minutes, I heard what sounded like bipedal footsteps moving through the forest. The steps sounded like a person walking toward me. I assumed someone else was in the woods, possibly a trespasser or a poacher, so I began scanning in the direction of the sound. Instead of a person, a white-tailed buck stepped out of the foliage. That was strange. It was a really impressive buck. At least 8 points, probably around 180 pounds. What bothered me was that the movement had sounded completely human, but what emerged was a deer. A large oak tree stood beside the clearing, and the buck slowly walked over to it, stopped directly in front of the trunk. Without warning, the deer began smashing its face into the tree. Now, remember, we've heard some stuff like this.
Yeah.
It struck the oak again and again, and I could hear the bone cracking as it drove its skull into the trunk. The animal continued doing it with incredible force, but it was not making the sounds I would expect from an injured or dying deer. There have been very few times in my life where I've been completely frozen by fear, and this was one of them. When an animal's in pain, it makes sounds. Deer have a recognizable dying grunt, but there was nothing like that. I heard no cries or no indication that the animal was reacting to the pain. The only sound was the repeated impact of bone striking the tree. Now, I tried to understand what I was seeing. I wondered whether the animal might be suffering from chronic wasting disease or some other neurological condition. I then noticed something else that seemed wrong. Most animals' eyes reflect light back toward you at night. I saw no reflection from this deer's eyes. There was no visible eye shine at all, which was simply strange. After the buck finished smashing its face against the tree, it stepped backwards. It then stood upright on its hind legs, and in the clearest voice I've ever heard, it said, I know you're there.
The deer spoke?
The deer spoke. Leon says, I was terrified. The animal should not have had a functioning jaw after what it had just done, much less the ability to produce a human voice. I could not understand how it was speaking. I felt frozen in time, as though someone had placed me inside gelatin. I could see and hear what was happening, but I couldn't react. I tried to come up with a logical explanation, but every possibility failed. Nothing about the situation made sense. The only explanation that entered my mind was that I was looking at something like a skinwalker.
Yeah, it's not a deer.
It felt ancient, as though it had been there long before us and would remain long after we were gone. The voice reminded me of the deep ancestral voices sometimes used in portrayals of elderly Native American men. It was powerful and completely clear. It felt as though I'd been watching the buck for hours, but the entire exchange probably only lasted 5 to 10 seconds. After speaking, it dropped back onto all fours and calmly walked into the brush. As soon as I could move, I dropped my laptop and ran back to my vehicle and immediately left the area. So I refused to return for about a month and eventually went back, got my laptop, the game camera. But one of the first things that bothered me was the condition of the laptop. It had supposedly been sitting outdoors for a month, exposed to weather, dirt, leaves, and animals. It should have been filthy or damaged. Instead, it looked as though it had been placed there only 20 minutes before I got back. I then walked over to the oak tree where the buck had repeatedly struck its head. And when I looked down, my stomach dropped. There were fragments of bone and antler near the base of the tree. I picked up one of the splinters and held it in my hand and remember thinking that this is real. In a strange way, it was reassuring because it suggested that I had not imagined the entire incident, that there were physical material where I remembered seeing the buck injure itself. Now, whether the encounter was supernatural or not, I had no desire to experience anything like it again, and I never returned to that location.
Yeah.
So, Leon. Now, I do remember us... We've had a few where people have reported seeing these not deer and them doing something violent to themselves, right? For some reason. Now, every time when I first hear it, when you hear the buck on a tree, I'm always thinking of just rubs. Like maybe, right. You know, it's just being extremely violent. Leon says he found bone. He found all that stuff. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen one. Of course, I've never seen a not deer skinwalker go hard on the, in the paint on a tree, but I've seen a lot of them make rubs, and it looks awesome, but I wouldn't use the word violent to describe it.
Yeah. No, right? I mean, I've sat there and watched them.
It's just them doing what deer stuff do. But this one seemed to take it to another level and then just decided to get up and say, hey, what's up? Like he was messing with them the whole time.
That's why it's not a deer, man.
Yeah, no.
It literally is a not deer.
100%.
Talking, can you imagine the deer talked where we were at?
The ones,
they'd be laughing at me when I missed and
100%,
stuff.
100%. Dude, it would point at me and chuckle. I mean, they know they're safe when I've got my stick bow around. They're just like, this guy is no threat whatsoever.
Yeah, can you bring a salt block out here? Yeah. I'm tired of just eating this corn.
Why are you wasting your time out here? You can't hit us.
Yeah.
You just like being cold for no reason?
I've got some unusual UFO encounters.
Okay. How unusual?
They're just strange.
Okay.
This comes from our buddy, Albert Rosales.
Yeah.
You remember Albert?
Yeah.
In fact, we were the first person to interview him years ago. Remember when he came on? He was like, I've never done anything
like this.
That's
true. Yeah, that's true. We had talked to him a bunch off air, and then we got him to come on. Yeah.
I'm talking like 2013. I mean, it was a long time ago. This is when he still had the flying humanoid website.
Yeah.
When it was over 17,000 sightings at that time.
That whole website was just a rabbit hole you could dive into and just be like, what is going on?
The website doesn't exist, but you can buy the printed version on Amazon, I believe, of all those encounters.
I urge everyone to do it if you're into humanoids.
I think it's in several volumes. They're like six total volumes.
A whole encyclopedia of humanoids.
It's just story after story.
Man, it's
good
stuff.
There's some wild stuff in there.
Yeah.
Well, this one comes from one of those.
Uh-oh, here
Not
we go.
Not from that journal, but this from the access to his old website.
Yeah, uh-oh, here we go.
On the morning of July 13th, 1959, just before sunrise, a woman living on a dairy farm near Blenheim, New Zealand, headed out to milk her cows. It was around 5:30 a.m. As she made her way across the paddock, something unusual caught her attention. Through the low morning clouds, she noticed a strange green glow. Moments later, the light broke through the cloud, covered and separated into two bright points that she later described as looking like eyes or big lamps. Suddenly, the entire area around her was illuminated by what she called a horrid sort of color. Descending, silently from the sky, was a circular craft, about 9 meters across, with what appeared to be a curved glass cockpit. From beneath it, two shafts of green light shone toward the ground, while two rows of small orange jets extended outward from the rim like spokes of a great wheel. Although she admitted she was frightened, she also found the sight strangely beautiful. According to reports later published by the APRO Bulletin and the NOUFORS, the experience became even more extraordinary. The cold winter air suddenly turned warm, and she heard a faint, steady hum. She later recalled that despite being scared stiff, she felt both curious and captivated. Decades later, every detail reminded her of this vivid memory. It was just imprinted on her mind, she said. I just took it in. I saw everything in those few moments. Looking through the curved glass cockpit, she could make out two occupants wearing shiny silver suits and matching helmets. The suits were tight-fitting, almost like wetsuits, with a metallic appearance. She compared it to aluminum foil. The two figures sat one behind the other, both facing away from her. Beneath them, a flickering light reflected off the silver clothing. Then, one of the occupants climbed out of the craft. He walked toward her, and through a small visor in his helmet, she could see part of his face. Around his waist was a wide belt with a black circular device at its center. A harness crossed his chest, supporting what looked like a small dial and several tubes that ran up into his helmet. One detail that stood out above all the others, his left hand had appeared to be missing, enclosed instead within a dark sheath. The figure suddenly shouted something at her in a language that she did not recognize. Without waiting for a response, he turned around, climbed back into his craft, and took his seat. A few moments later, the orange jets around the edge of the craft began firing once again. The disc tilted upward, then accelerated into the sky with incredible speed. As it disappeared behind the clouds, it emitted only a soft, high-pitched whine. Then it was gone. The woman found herself standing alone in what she described was a waft of hot, peppery air. She also noticed that the strange pull she had felt from the green lights had vanished. Still shaken and unsure of what she had witnessed, she eventually carried on with the task that she had set out to do that morning. "While I was milking," she later said, "I kept wondering and felt a bit shaken and puzzled and did not quite know what to do about it." After finishing her chores, she returned to the farmhouse and woke her husband, Frederick, to tell him what had happened. She worried he might laugh at her, but he listened carefully. Taking her account seriously, he asked whether she had contacted the police or not. At around 7 a.m., she decided to call them. Later that day, Woodbourne Commanding Officer Arthur Gainsford visited the farm to interview her in person. Frederick had already informed him of his wife's remarkable story earlier that morning. Gainsford reported that she appeared calm, composed, and entirely rational. Local police echoed the assessment, describing her as a rational and stable person, based on their previous interaction with her while she had assisted them in another matter. So that's a wild story. This craft comes down, the dude gets out, yells at her in some language, doesn't wait for her response, turns around, gets back in the craft and flies off. Like, what is that?
He was road raging.
Like, what? What are you doing?
Maybe he's just letting her get out of here in case something bad falls off this thing. I've just got it running.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, what is that about?
I don't know.
See,
why are their outfits always tight-fitting? They're always described as that.
Yeah.
They don't like sagging.
I also like this the wildness of each one of them like that. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Right? That's one of those one-off stories that just makes no sense.
Yeah, and it's like some people, they're not frightened. They become scared later when they think back at it.
Yeah.
But at the time, they're just like, man, I'm interested. What is this?
Like in the moment, you're just caught up in it.
Yeah.
Like where the shock doesn't hit you till much later, and then you're trying to work it out in your head of what you're seeing. Yeah. I think I'm gonna discuss a couple of things here that I really enjoy. I know Kyle enjoys it. I believe I've discussed this once before. I want to tell this story before I get into this other one, just because it's so much fun. This took place in 1998. A woman named Nanette and one of her friends, I believe the woman's named Charlotte. In 1999. I was 7 years old and playing in the woods with my friend Charlotte. We were standing at opposite ends of a large fallen log when Charlotte narrated the game we were playing. I suddenly noticed movement in my peripheral vision. I had seen similar movement in the woods before. Whenever I turned to look directly at it, however, it would disappear or scatter before I could identify it. This time, instead of immediately turning my head, I tried to focus on the movement using only my peripheral vision. My heart skipped a beat when I realized that I could make out a group of little people looking at me. I froze in the position I'd been standing in after several seconds, and I realized that Charlotte had stopped narrating our game. She was also completely still. She appeared to be looking toward me, but her attention was focused on these figures. I'm fairly certain that they were wearing clothing because they did not appear to be naked. I could tell that they knew we had noticed them, and when Charlotte moved her eyes, the figures dispersed. We did not speak about what happened until we were safely inside her house. We were not exactly afraid during the walk home, but we were mostly confused. Before discussing the encounter, we each wrote down what we had seen so we could determine whether our descriptions matched. Unfortunately, both descriptions were vague. The two details we agreed on were that the figures appeared to be clothed and were definitely less than 1 foot tall. Goes on to say that the one thing we both understood was that we should mind our business and not go searching for them. Normally, our instinct would have been to investigate. After all, we thought we had discovered a colony of little people living in the woods. What continues to affect me is the way we reacted. We quietly left the area and did not discuss the sighting until we were behind closed doors. And even then, we did not immediately speak about it. We wrote everything down first. I do not remember being terribly frightened. We seemed to accept what happened and move on, although the experience gave us a new understanding of what might be possible in this world or our universe. Later on in life, I watched the film The Indian in the Cupboard, which reminded me of the little people we had seen. And by that time, however, I was no longer seeing them. So,
man,
a little something like that. Well, I tell you that because I want to tell you this one.
Before you get into it, I just love the idea of these people seeing the little people.
I know.
Like, to me, I'm way more interested in that than I am Bigfoot.
Yeah. Oh, the little people?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
And if I could choose one sighting of all the things we cover, that's what I would like to see.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I would love to see the Fae in the woods. That would be great. Just the
little
people.
There's actually, I don't remember the name of it, but there actually is one particular mushroom. And if you eat that mushroom,
you'll
like
see them.
90% chance you'll see them.
Now, you won't ever come back to sanity, but at least you'll get to go see them.
Yeah.
So Lon had this one. And this is really interesting. It was an earlier incident. It took place in 1997. And then the other one, I believe, was in 2002. This is one of the ones that I was telling you that come from the Northern Cheyenne Reservation near Ashland and Lame Deer, Montana. It says that I am from the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. I live in Ashland, approximately 20 miles from Lame Deer. I've heard stories about the area around my grandmother's home, and I've personally witnessed what I can only describe as a deer man. It happened around 2002. I was hunting on the big divide between Ashland and Lame Deer. I was glassing the terrain, hoping to find a deer that I could harvest for one of the elders. I spotted what I initially believed to be a whitetail buck. It was standing inside a patch of brush in a draw approximately 200 yards below me. As I continued watching it through the binoculars, its body gradually became more clear. What I saw appeared to have had the head of a deer attached to the muscular body of a man. Needless to say, I hurried out of the area and did not return there for quite some time. Now, I have also heard many stories about little men, although my only personal experience with one was not a complete sighting. This happened in 1997. I was house sitting for my parents while they were away for the weekend. One afternoon, I was sitting in the living room watching television when I noticed something moving out of the corner of my eye. Here we go again.
Yeah.
I turned toward the dining room window and saw what looked like the top of someone's head rising briefly into view at the bottom of the window. It appeared that someone was repeatedly jumping up trying to look inside the house. I watched it happen approximately half a dozen times. I then rushed over to the window to see who was outside, but no one was there. I immediately went outside and searched the area and couldn't find anyone. My parents' house was in a rural location with very few trees or bushes nearby. If it had been a child, I should have been able to see where that child had gone. Based on the height of the windowsill, I estimated that whatever was jumping outside would have been approximately 3 foot tall. Even when it jumped, only the top of its head appeared above the sill. Now, a close friend of mine also experienced strange activity involving what she described as a little woman near her home. She would hang laundry in her backyard, and when she returned later to take it down, she would sometimes find clothing and sheets on the ground. Other pieces of laundry would be missing entirely. This happened several times, and eventually, she saw a little woman running through the yard at night. She believes the little people on the reservation are invisible during the day. She described the little woman as approximately 2.5 foot tall, brown skin and long, colorful shawl wrapped around her. And there have been many strange sightings and encounters on this reservation. B, from the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in Ashland, Montana.
Again, a reservation.
Yup.
What is it?
I don't know. Maybe it's the people are just closer to the land there. Maybe I have no idea what it is.
Well, they're definitely more spiritual. So maybe there's a connection, and that's why it bleeds through on those reservation areas.
I think there's a lot more of them out there. We just don't ever. I mean, you think of some of the places you've got to go, and I think of some of the places like my buddies have gone hunting way out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You would think you would see them in and out that area, but maybe it's one of those things that this is part of my thinking. If you're in an area that's heavily traveled with foot traffic, whether it's a very well-used trail up mm-hmm. in the mountains or national parkland and all that stuff, right. Yeah, you might see something, but you got to think those are the fae that live on the edge. If you go deep into the backcountry, you're dealing with fae that aren't around people.
Yeah. Right?
So they're harder to see. They're out there for a reason. And for all we know, you think about it, the little people of the woods, the fae, they could talk to birds. Let's say they could talk to anything here. So you don't know.
Yeah, it's like a nature
bird,
spirit.
Yeah, a bird may be telling them, hey, you know, on the other side of that ridge, you got four guys hiking up this way. Y'all might want to pick it up and get on out of there, right? And then the fae move off.
Oh, yeah. I've seen crows. Like,
good for you. I've seen a crow.
No, I mean that like will alert the other animals that you're in there.
Oh, when you hear them calling and stuff. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're like, shut up.
Yeah. Stop. Don't give away my position. Like squirrels, right?
Yeah. I got another crazy one for you.
Wait. Is this more like humanoid UFO stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Here we go. No sleep tonight.
In September of 2019, a massive wildfire raged across the Amazon rainforest. 30-year-old volunteer paramedic Paul Parada was stationed in the Bolivian Amazon, providing medical support to emergency crews battling the blazes. One night around 11 p.m., Parada stepped outside his medical tent for a cigarette. That's when he noticed someone walking toward him. At first, it was the man's height that caught his attention. He was unusually tall. As he drew closer, the more details became visible in the dim light. His skin was an unnaturally pale white. He wore a shiny, one-piece suit marked with several silver stripes, and his long, blonde hair flowed down to at least the middle of his back, gleaming almost as if it reflected its own light. Kind of like an elf, right? Like you think of Lord of the Rings, the elves.
They shimmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the time the stranger was only a few feet away, Parada noticed something else. The man was clutching a towel, or perhaps a small blanket, tightly against his upper torso, as though he had suffered a serious injury. Concerned, Parada called out, asking if he needed any medical help. To his surprise, the stranger answered in flawless Spanish, "Yes." Although the entire situation felt strange, Parada did what any medic would do. He led the injured man into the medical tent. Once inside, he asked him to uncover the injury. Without saying another word, the stranger removed the cloth. Beneath it was a deep, gaping wound. Parada immediately went to work. As he treated the injury, one detail stood out. Blood was flowing freely from the wound, yet none of it seemed to soak into the stranger's clothing. Instead, it simply rolled away, as if the metallic suit was completely waterproof.
He had rain-exed it.
Yeah. Curious, Parada asked what had happened, but this time the stranger never opened his mouth. Instead, Parada heard the answer inside of his own mind. The man told him, telepathically, that he had been attacked by a puma while moving through the forest. The experience left the young paramedic stunned. Sensing his fear, the stranger spoke into his mind once again, reassuring him that he had nothing to fear and that no harm would come to him. Feeling somewhat calmer, Parada finished treating the wound, but the night was far from over. Once the bandaging was complete, the stranger thanked him and stood to leave. Before stepping outside, however, he asked Parada to come with him. Then he added one final warning. "You shouldn't be shocked by what you're about to see." Parada followed him out into the darkness. What greeted him was something he says he has never forgotten. Hovering only a few feet above the ground was a large metallic disc-shaped craft. Standing beneath it were two more humanoid figures. They looked remarkably similar to the injured man, except for one unsettling difference. Their skin was green. Again, this is an elf, right? Describing elves.
Or goblins and elves. And like, what's everybody hanging out together?
Even stranger was the way they moved. Their movements were stiff, mechanical, almost robotic.
They've been riding too long.
As though they weren't entirely natural. As Parada was watching them, he became overwhelmed by an intense feeling of fear and dread that seemed to build the longer he looked. After several moments, the two green-skinned beings began walking toward the injured figure. At the same time, the tall, pale humanoid started walking toward them. Then he suddenly stopped. Turning back towards Parada, he addressed him by name. The moment sent a chill through the medic. At no point had he ever told the stranger his name. Before Parada could react, the figure turned and continued walking towards the others. Overwhelmed by everything he had just witnessed, Parada retreated into the safety of the medical tent. His thoughts were racing, and he never saw the three figures board the craft, nor did he witness its depart. For a long time, he kept the encounter almost entirely to himself. The only person he confided in was his brother, who was also volunteering as a medic in the region. But the experience refused to leave him. Over the following months, Parada reportedly suffered vivid dreams, reoccurring nightmares, and periods of insomnia. Eventually, he decided to speak publicly about what he claimed he had seen that night. He also revealed something that immediately caught the attention of researchers. He had kept the medical dressing that he used to treat the stranger's wound.
Now we're talking.
And according to Parada, it still contained the mysterious figure's blood. As of this writing, no publicly known DNA analysis has ever been performed of this sample. If Parada's account is accurate, it raises one unsettling question. Who or what was the injured stranger? So,
you know what my favorite part about that story is?
Yeah, what?
When he says he spoke flawless Spanish and the alien said, "See."
Yeah, that's right.
I'm speaking flawless Spanish.
It reminds me of the encounters of the UFO wave during like the 1950s, where people talked meeting with these tall whites,
yep,
or the Nordics, yep, right? And the witnesses often described the Nordics as peaceful beings. They weren't abducting people. They were just kind of warning humanity, like, look, you're kind of messing up the planet. If you guys don't change your ways, you're going to destroy this beautiful place. Trust me, this is like one in a billion planets out
here.
Don't ruin it. Or if y'all don't stop the fighting, you're going to eradicate yourselves.
I feel sorry for the dude walking around in the jungle like his first trip around and gets attacked by a jaguar.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty rough go, right? Like all of a sudden you're wearing a big cat. You're like, bro, I didn't know these were even down here. I'm just visiting.
They don't carry first aid kits? Obviously not, because that's why he got off the craft. He got off and went to the medical tent.
And was like, ugh, I got mauled.
Yeah.
Can you locals do anything? I got mauled. Didn't save him one bit. Isn't that the idea of it, though? I think of the Brazilian one that we always talk about.
Yeah.
He's talking about the doctors and them running around in town with them and people seeing multiple aliens and dudes dying after coming in contact with them.
Oh, yeah, the Virginia.
Yeah. I mean, that's anytime I think about interaction now, that's the story that I go to.
That is a good one. It's a wild story because, not of course, the story itself is wild, but how many people witnessed it?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the one of the school children in Zimbabwe.
Yes.
The thing landed in the middle of the day.
Like 40 kids get to stand out there and watch it go down.
And teachers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've interviewed them. They all have the same story.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, it's like, isn't it?
Well, if that's not real, then what did they see?
Yeah. Speaking of seeing, we'll see y'all on the other side of this break. I got one more story I'm going to drop right before we wrap this baby up, folks. You're listening to what? Expanded Perspectives.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to FinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
As I said, speaking of seeing, I'm going to leave y'all with this one story here. We've been talking about like first responders and trained observers and all that dealing with something. Listen to this story that happened to a Border Patrol agent. This is pretty wild. They don't really give you the date. He was newly hired. They don't really give you the exact time, right? It was at night, this whole thing. But this is what went down. It was shared by a source who spoke with an anonymous Border Patrol agent. And according to this source, the agent had described some other unusual incidents from the southern border. Goes on to include encounters involving large, unidentified, hair-covered figures. Yeah, get a load of this. So, at the time of this encounter, the agent was still completing his field training. He was assigned to patrol with a senior co-worker who served as his field training officer. The two men traveled in a Ford truck while the training officer showed the new agent various checkpoints, dirt roads, and locations where people were frequently discovered crossing the international border. The agent recalled working shifts that lasted approximately 10 to 12 hours. The patrol area was reportedly near the point where Arizona, California, and Mexico meet. So one night, this agent, still relatively new to the job, of course, he's suffering from a cold. He doesn't feel well. So he and his training officer are traveling along this dirt road that formed part of their normal patrol route. And the agent noticed that this area seemed unusually undisturbed. So he explained that they normally found discarded water bottles, trash, clothing, just other evidence that people had passed through in this area of the desert. But on this particular night, there was nothing indicating any kind of activity. So the agent usually reached a turnaround point and then activated the vehicle spotlights, and they initially saw nothing unusual. But as the truck began turning, its headlights and spotlights swept across a large shape in the distance. The training officer reportedly looked toward it and said, "Oh, that's probably just a wild animal. We should go take a look." So they moved closer in the truck, and although the terrain became increasingly rough, the agents just slowly cruised in, trying to determine what they were seeing. The figure appeared to be covered in dark black fur. Its posture made identification difficult, and the men initially thought it was a bear crouched over and feeding on something.
Yeah.
So this new agent was extremely uncomfortable with the situation and suggested that they leave the animal alone. He reportedly asked, "Maybe we should just back out of here." The training officer responded, "No, we need to go check it out," which I can understand why. If it is, let's say it was a bear down there in the desert, it may have mauled somebody. That's what we need to go check it out. What's it eating? Well, it could be a person.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. We don't know. Maybe not, but it could be. So they continued forward until the truck was approximately 30 yards from this figure. And by that point, even the training officer seemed to realize that something was wrong. The agents activated another set of the powerful lights mounted on the roof of the truck. The additional illumination exposed the entire figure. The creature suddenly stood upright. And for an instant, the new agent thought he was looking at an enormous man wearing a fur coat. When the figure turned towards the truck, however, he saw that its head resembled that of a large dog or wolf. This creature was entirely black. Its eyes reflected the vehicle's lights with an amber-colored shine. The agent described the figure as extremely muscular, with broad shoulders and a massive physical build. It appeared far too large to be an ordinary dog or wolf. Most disturbing was its posture. The creature was standing on its rear legs and maintaining a fully upright position while staring directly at the agents. The driver immediately stopped the truck, and for several seconds, the two men watched this enormous upright canine as it remained there motionless in the lights. The creature then took a step towards them. Yeah, that sounds fun. Mm. After a brief pause, it took another step and continued closing the distance. It wasn't moving quickly, but the length of its strides allowed it to cover the ground rapidly. The agent threw the truck into reverse. As the vehicle began moving, the creature opened its mouth slightly and lowered its upper body into a hunched position. The witness interpreted the movement as though the animal were evaluating them or preparing to pursue prey. The agent quickly maneuvered the truck around and accelerated away from the area. When he looked in the rearview mirror, he could still see the upright canine behind them. The creature's dark form was briefly illuminated by the truck's red rear lights. The agent later said that he had never seen anything resembling it before and that the experience terrified him. The agents drove directly back to their station, and once arrived, the training officer attempted to dismiss the encounter, telling the new agent that they had only seen a large dog. Despite that explanation, he also instructed the agent not to discuss the incident with anyone. Neither man mentioned the encounter in the official nightly report. According to the source, people encountered along the border occasionally tell agents about strange creatures in the desert. Some reportedly speak about lobos, unusually large, hairy men, and other unexplained figures seen in these remote areas. So, nothing like working on the border and driving up on a dog man. That'll make your night go great, right? And the fact that it wasn't afraid.
Right.
And the other thing, I know they're armed. They never even just like, nope, let's just go ahead and get out of here.
That's what I would do. That's just the best move, right?
We gotta go.
Because first of all, you don't have silver bullets.
That's a good point. That's a
so
really good point.
You're just going to infuriate it, and then it's going to come maul you. And if you survive that, then now you're a wolf.
That's even better point. Now I'm going to be a werewolf.
Right, yeah, you got to have fleas and ticks.
Man, mange.
You
got to
wear a collar.
Might get the mange. I got to get chipped.
Yeah.
Man, that doesn't sound fun. Then somebody's going to want to try to get you neutered. That doesn't sound like a good time either.
No.
Man, Yeah, I'd just as soon not get bit by a werewolf.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
That sounds like some struggles.
Speaking of werewolves, they're in the process of making a new Howling movie. Remember The Howling?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Those were good.
I just hope they don't mess it up with CGI.
They will.
I like the original transformation. That was so freaking scary as a kid.
They're going to ruin it.
They're also filming a new Nightmare on Elm Street. Luke is sad that, what's his name? That Robert Englund is not going to be playing Freddy Krueger. I'm like, Luke, Robert Englund's like
75.
He's like 90 years old.
Yeah,
bro.
I wonder how old he really is. But yeah, yeah, he's an older fella. He don't need to be running around trying.
Luke doesn't understand the concept that those movies came out in the 80s. You know,
yeah, because he's just found them and sees all. Yeah, it just seems. Yeah, you don't understand.
In fact, I got a movie for my birthday. He's treating me to go see.
Oh, this will be a good one.
The Ice Cream Man.
Oh, I bet you can't wait.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is.
Glad you asked for that. That's spending some good quality time with your son.
Mm-hmm.
When he's famous for making movies one day, we won't be able to bust on him.
And then there's another
one. No, I'm still going to bust on him.
There's another one coming up. Clayface, maybe? I don't know. He tells me about this stuff all the time. I guess it's in his algorithm because he knows about all this.
Well, and it's his jam, dude. He keeps up with all of it.
He loves it.
All of it.
What was the one he just went and watched? Him and my wife went and watched Pinocchio Unstrung. Apparently there's like a killer Pinocchio clown.
Okay.
Or not clown, I'm sorry. Pinocchio puppet going around killing
Unstrung.
People.
Unstrung. I like how they come up with these, man. I saw one pop up. I know he's probably seen it. Some about Bambi.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's seen that. I went and saw it with him. Bambi the Reckoning. We went and watched
it. Oh, God.
Yeah, not very good, folks. Not very good.
As long as he don't listen to that. I wish they had four thumbs.
I told you
he'd get four thumbs down.
He'd get mad if I rated it low. He would really be depressed.
But he's kind of coming around to the whole idea of the ratings now. He's gotten older. He's kind of seen it all. Yeah, now he's becoming. By the time that kid's like 16, 17, he's going to be so picky about horror movies, dude. It's going to be so bad.
He's like Lyle Blackburn. Lyle Blackburn has seen every horror movie he ever made.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of it. Yeah,
that's what Luke is like. He loves it. Obsessive. I need to take Luke over to Lyle's house where he can look at all the memorabilia.
Oh, yeah. Him and Lyle would just sit and chit-chat. Always make the joke. Lyle and Luke will end up getting married. That'll end up what's going to go down.
Yeah.
And then it'll just be a monster household.
Man. Well, we got to get out of here, folks. We got to get ready to
go pack
up to Tennessee for the Ducks Unlimited Expo. Cannot wait. That's going to be fun.
Good times.
If you want to share your stories with us and the listeners, do not hesitate. Don't ask. We already telling you. We want them. You can email them to expandedperspectives at yahoo.com. You can call the hotline 888-393-2783. And don't forget about Patreon, folks. Go over to Patreon. You'll get extra episodes over there.
We're going to do an on-the-road episode this trip.
We are, as well as ad-free versions of the show and things like that. Articles. Right. We share articles and things like that. And you support your favorite show. It really does help us out. For everybody out there, I guess have a good week. Be safe.
Yeah, word.
We'll talk to you next time. I'm Kyle.
He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday.
Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.